League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Luke Cutforth, and special guest, the fifth Sci Guy, Noah Finns.
Hey!
Fifth
Sci Guy.
There's two of you now, I must at least be four.
This week, we're talking about far-out fears and spooky science, but first, we have a wee review.
A wee review.
This one is 5 stars. It says, awesome. I've been listening for a little while now, and this podcast is helping keep me sane while studying for finals. Love the science, tangents, and all the laughs. All around amazing podcast.
Oh, that is great review.
It's very kind, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I do have another question for you. I say another question. This is the first question I'm asking in this episode, and it's for everyone that's listening or watching. And if you're listening on Apple or Spotify, head to YouTube, get down in the comments, and answer this question. The question is, do you have any phobias?
No.
Oh. No phobias?
None.
Nobia?
Only homo. I used to be scared of the sea. Well, I... No,
you still
actually,
kind of are scared.
No, well, no, I'm not. The first panic attack I had was in the ocean. Because we went snorkeling and there was an eel underneath me and he kept circling me, so I had a panic attack.
Okay, I was
how do you know it was a boy eel?
Yeah.
How do you not know it was a she-eel?
To be fair, eels are all penis.
I was going to say, it's all length, yeah.
Yeah.
And women can have penises too.
I already said, not that penis equals man. I already got there. You didn't get me.
I don't know the gender identity of the eel. I'm sorry.
That's okay. So you don't have any phobias, Luke?
I've got the mild inherited arachnophobia, but... not particularly, no.
Okay, fair. I don't like moths.
I feel like that's more trauma than phobia.
Nothing happened.
No, I've not had any
He just doesn't like moths.
We used to live
What's a moth going to do to me? It's
Oh, No. We did used to live in a house where there were too many moths, but he had a moth phobia before that, so that was just horrifying.
Oh, no. I'm not scared of clothes moths or like the little moths. I will murder them indiscriminately.
It's the big moth.
Yeah, I don't like big moths.
I mean, I feel like nobody likes big moths, other than people like moth scientists, maybe.
No, the really big fluffy ones. They're really cute. My brother used to have one in like a glass picture frame. It was just a dead moth. It was like this big. It was huge.
Okay, well, dead moths, that's different.
No, it's not.
Are you scared of dead moths?
I don't like dead moths either. Look, okay, I'm trying to make myself like the big fuzzy moths because I understand intellectually that they are cute and I do get some kind of like, oh, you're fuzzy and pink and green, cute moth. But also I'm like, you're a moth, so you disgust me. I guess what it's like being a homophobe and thinking that, I don't know, like Ryan Reynolds isn't gay.
who's a gay man?
Lil Nas. It's like being a homophobe and thinking Lil Nas is hot, you know? I feel like that's how
hot?
I feel. Yeah. Like, I think...
Homophobes think this very gay man is hot?
I'm saying it's like
maybe
being a homophobe.
Woman homophobe.
Yeah. It's like being a homophobe and being attracted to Lil Nas.
Sorry.
Like,
did you just erase all women then?
Oh, shut up.
Always said he was a sexist. No, but seriously, like, it's kind of like that. Like, I see them and I'm like, I know you're cute, but you disgust me and I hate you and please die.
It does make me feel very good, though, when you're like, Noah, moth. And I'm like, don't worry, I've got it. I've got it. I've figured it out. We'll get through this.
It's the one thing I don't have to deal with in this house. Just moths. That and hoovering. Don't need to do either of those things, but we should get into the episode and actually talk about phobias. So, my first question to you both, other than that other one, is what is a phobia?
I would say it's a fear of something that is not necessarily like a hardwired fear that you're born with. Maybe, can you have a height phobia? What's that called?
Is
that
you can, but I know.
But I feel like that's a fairly normal phobia to have, because height equals can die.
Yeah.
And so that maybe wouldn't be a phobia. I don't know. Maybe it actually is a phobia.
Now, this is interesting, right? So I feel like you are both in the position that I was a few days ago.
Do you mean ignorance?
Yes. Before I researched this episode, because I thought I knew what phobias were. And if pressed to answer a question like I've just done to you both, I would probably have said roughly the same thing.
I mean, I studied this in psychology.
Oh, so
fully,
then
we did phobias. I have no idea. Maybe like an intense fear of something resulting in avoidant behavior.
Does it have to be irrational?
Oh, wow. Yeah, it does. And that was really good. Wow. You both together have, well, okay.
Hell yeah.
Look in with the assist, but Noah, you scored there. Well done.
Look at us. So basically what you're saying is 1-0 to Team Luke and Noah. And 0 to you.
Since I give out the points, I'm actually already sitting on 1 billion. And you are on, you know, I don't know what, 35,000 a year?
God, the odds are really stacked against us.
No, so phobia, it obviously comes from phobos, the Greek.
Obviously.
Duh.
I knew that. Did you know
Phobos,
that?
Yeah,
yeah,
of course.
Cool. Phobos.
Two points to Luke and Noah.
Really?
Is this Latin or points? Greek?
It's Greek.
Oh, sorry, I didn't learn Greek, unfortunately.
Caecilius est in horto.
Amo massa mat.
Oh, touche. That's French.
No, it's Latin.
Is touche Latin?
Amo massa mat is Latin. Never mind. Sorry, continue, Corey.
Sorry, what did you expect when you invited Noah back?
You add an element to this podcast that is so chaotic.
Yeah.
I can't control it.
I was going to ignore the Greek thing because you were the first thing that said anything about it. So I could have got away with saying nothing, but I was encouraged.
You two, I'm going to have to separate you. Okay. I'm going to have to separate you. You have to sit somewhere.
All right. Okay. So rather than it being Team Noah versus Team Noah and Luke versus Team Corey, Corey is the referee and it's Team versus Team Luke. We've both got 1 point each for helping each other.
Okay.
Somewhat of an own goal for both of us. But thus forward, from this point out, game on.
So a phobia. Phobia, the word, comes from
Phobos,
which is
the Greek
god
for fear.
It's the Greek god of fear. And we're going to go to the NHS for a description of what a phobia is. And they say, a phobia is an overwhelming and debilitating fear of an object, place, situation, feeling, or animal. Phobias are more pronounced than fears. They develop when a person has an exaggerated or unrealistic sense of danger about a situation or object. If a phobia becomes very severe, a person may organize their life around avoiding the thing that's causing them anxiety. As well as restricting their day-to-day life, it can also cause a lot of distress.
Yeah.
So you were kind of spot on there, Noah, when you talked about the avoidant behavior.
Yeah, I was 100% correct. That's true.
Yes, well done. I'm congratulating you. Maybe don't rub it in.
2-1!
And Luke, you did a good job.
That was a back reference to a thing you already achieved.
One point for Luke for realizing.
You don't get another GCSE every time you mention a good GCSE that you got.
And good job to Luke for
2-1.
Good job to Luke for pointing out that it could be irrational. And it's not necessarily the thing that you're scared of that's irrational. It's the fear response to it that's irrational. So, for example, it can make a lot of sense to have a fear of spiders, of particular spiders, because some spiders can be dangerous in Australia, not in the UK.
Yeah.
In Australia. So being scared of spiders or having a fear response, you know, a sort of danger response to spiders in Australia makes sense. However, if that response is wildly, sort of like wildly, wildly out of proportion with the danger involved, then that kind of an irrational response to a somewhat rational fear.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Question. Can you have a phobia of people?
Sure.
Oh, what, isn't it just people that become really reclusive? What's it called? When you're scared to go outside.
It's agoraphobia.
Agoraphobia.
Oh, no, yeah. I'm thinking of a different word.
Oh, okay.
I meant a phobia of specific people. But,
of a specific person.
Yeah.
I suppose one could conceivably have a phobia of a specific person.
A specific type of person.
That's called racism.
I was going to say bigotry in general. But
yeah.
You might be wondering why I've got a quote from the NHS here. And that's because a phobia is actually an anxiety disorder. I didn't realize that. I thought a phobia was just a word for something you're very scared of. It's like, ooh, it's a big fear. But actually, it's got a clinical, very sort of specific technical definition.
Psychologists pathologizing everything again.
Nothing is the psychologist doing right? this. It's everyone else. Oh, it is the psychologist doing it. Yeah. Yeah. But then that means that...
Scared of spiders? Put it in the DSM.
Look, if psychologists didn't pathologize everything, they'd be out of the job. So, like, what are they going to do?
Too much free time.
Not enough friends because they're
Bring
psychologists.
Bring back conscription, I say. But only for psychologists.
Only for psychologists. Like, you get out of... You finish your final psychology exam at uni and they're like, okay, right, that's it. In the army.
Time
go on.
2 years in the army.
So... So because it's a technical term, that means it falls into that category that we talk about very often of words from psychology that have been used by everyone else and have now kind of been diluted in their meaning.
Yeah. Oh, you know, like, I mean, people calling themselves OCD because they don't like things being a mess.
Oh yeah, because they have the crazy thought to think, maybe things should be neat and tidy. Oh, I've got OCD, oh, look at me. You know, yeah, like, you know, are people that are like, oh, I'm so autistic when they do something that isn't remotely autistic.
Slightly less, but like the idea of Stockholm Syndrome having a different idea in the public consciousness as it actually does in literature.
Yeah, in the literature it's just not a thing, and in the public consciousness it's an actual thing that happens. Yeah.
Yeah.
But back to phobias, I kind of want to touch on really quickly why phobias are different from fears. So do you have any ideas what differentiates a phobia from a fear?
I would say that a phobia is a somewhat outsized response to stimulus.
That is one of the factors. Yeah, it also has to last for more than 6 months. We'll get into the diagnostic criteria later, but it's got to be sort of long lasting. It's got to, yeah, as you say, like a disproportionate response, and it's got to have a significant impact on how you live your life.
Oh, classic DSM-5 language. There we go.
Mm. Yeah, look, the psychologists, they know what they're doing. Okay, if it impacts your life, then they're pathologizing it. That's it. Yeah.
They literally do that with ADHD. Like, if you get good grades, maybe don't bother being tested.
Well, that's why I wasn't diagnosed until I was in my mid-20s.
Me too.
Yeah. If you're good at school, you can't have anything wrong with you. Yeah, yeah, so a phobia isn't just a fear that's real bad. A phobia is a really bad fear in the same way that ADHD is really bad focusing. That's not really a good description of what ADHD is.
I focus real bad.
Yeah, I'm real bad at it. Like, because people with ADHD focus real good sometimes. They just can't.
Too good
control.
Sometimes.
Yeah, too good. Like, oh, where's my food and drink? I haven't eaten it for so long. Yeah, like,
where has time gone?
Right. Oh my God. It's useful. That's why everyone that you know that is a creative probably has ADHD. If you just
True
look
facts
around.
From Sci Guys.
For the
Make
first
sure to
time.
Source it.
Jesus Christ. So, how many people in the UK or in the US do you think have phobias?
50%.
No. 7%.
I don't have percentages. I have numbers. Do I drive with numbers?
In the UK? Oh. Or did you say the US?
In the UK or in the US. I
how
have
many people
numbers.
Are in the UK?
65 million.
So maybe 3 million.
Bit low. So there's 10 million people in the UK estimated to have one or more phobias. And in the US, about 19 million Americans have one or more phobias.
America have a lower proportion of people with phobias then.
I mean, it probably just depends on the estimate, to be honest. Like, I mean, these are just estimates because phobias aren't always diagnosed as well. So those numbers could, like, whether you're counting something, like, you know, as a mild phobia or not a phobia at all, it's difficult. So I wouldn't say that America is predisposed to being less phobic.
No.
If anything, I would say they're more phobic.
Yeah, I also know a friend who has a phobia of mayonnaise, but he did not go to the doctor for it.
I don't
want
to laugh, but what?
To be honest, I would also not go to the doctor for a phobia of mayonnaise. I have the same friend. I just realized that who that was.
You know
oh
who
my
it
god.
Is. You know who it is.
I would love. I'd love to know what the response of a doctor would be if you went and said you had a phobia of mayonnaise.
I mean, probably the same as the phobia of having a phobia of anything else. I mean, maybe a little titter behind closed doors.
Do you think it's easier to avoid spiders than it is to avoid mayonnaise?
Well, mayonnaise doesn't move of its own accord, so yeah.
It depends if it includes mayonnaise in packets.
Is it just the concept of mayonnaise, you know?
I'm not sure. Maybe I'll ask. Ask him.
Yeah, send him a message. But yeah, so, I mean, what you've kind of touched on there is that phobias can, you know, be about almost anything. You can have a phobia of pretty much any kind of thing, and they can also affect anyone. So they're more common to sort of start after childhood. You know, like they usually start between the age of 15 and 20, but they can also start in early childhood. And as I said, they can affect anyone regardless of race, age, sex, social background, all of that. Doesn't matter. You can get a phobia. Okay. It's phobias will get you regardless.
You can get a phobia. You can get a phobia.
Can I have one, please?
You can get a phobia.
Please.
Yeah, so it can it also affects men and women equally. The rates, as far as I'm aware, the prevalence rates for men and women are pretty much, you know,
that's
the same.
Good to hear.
Yeah, I don't know about non-binary people, but...
They're pussies.
Whoa.
They got so many phobias of the gender binary.
Whoa.
And... I don't know.
Do you just come on this podcast to say really, really horrible stuff about trans people?
Well, yes, because I can.
Wow.
Okay. So, some symptoms of phobias. You might not have any symptoms, you know, because you're avoiding the phobia, and you literally will not know that that you've got a phobia of something. Because, put it this way, right? Let's say you've got a phobia of planes, or like of flying.
Yeah.
How often do you actually fly? Not that often.
If you have a phobia, probably never.
If you're Travis Barker, you never fly. He's the drummer from Blink-182. He was in a really bad plane crash where he was one of the only survivors. So, yeah, while he was touring, he would just be in a bus on his own while everybody else flied.
Flied.
Flown. Flew. Flewed. Flown. Flan.
Everybody else had a nice plan while he sat on the bus. Yeah, so... You've hit on one of the symptoms of phobias there, which is
not flying and all of your friends eating flan.
Avoidant behavior.
That's what I said.
Yeah, sure. Other symptoms: unsteadiness, dizziness, lightheadedness. This is all from the NHS. Nausea, sweating.
Oh,
whoa.
Done.
Snap.
Good job.
Jinx, private padlock.
Increased heart rate or palpitations, shortness of breath, trembling or shaking, an upset stomach. Basically, you know, like anxiety symptoms, because, as I said, phobias are an anxiety disorder. So you would expect to see those anxiety related symptoms. Now, as I said, if you don't come into contact with your, you know, your sort of phobia often, you know, like if you don't fly, or, you know, because you've got a phobia of planes, or you don't realize that you've got a phobia of flying until, you know, you try to fly, you might not realize that you've got a phobia at all. You might not have the symptoms because you're just not interacting with the thing. Like, how often do you see a spider, really?
Quite often, actually.
Every day,
house.
Right? Yeah, every day, yeah. But, like, in some places, you might not see spiders. That's a really bad one.
So are you saying that, like, you could have, like, no access to, like say, like, chicken nuggets? Someone grows up in life and has never had a chicken nugget, and then the first time they see a chicken nugget, they're like, ah!
No. What I mean is that, you know,
probably
you might...
not with that specific example.
You will probably not have a phobia of a thing that you've never interacted with before.
Okay.
As far as I'm aware, the way that, you know, we think that phobias kind of form, that's unlikely. But what I mean is more that if you just don't interact with something very often, and you maybe had a bad experience once, or that caused a phobia, you know, you might not realize that you have a phobia of this particular thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously, there are different kinds of phobias. You know, there's not just one specific kind. There's actually two broad categories of phobias. Those are specific or simple phobias and complex phobias. What do you think the difference between those two is?
I would say, well, if something like PTSD and complex PTSD, I would say that simple phobias are like, I'm scared of spiders. And complex phobias are more complex than that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you definitely
I don't know in what specific way.
You definitely do know two complex phobias. We'll get into them in a sec.
Would it be the way that the phobia is, like, developed? Like, a simple phobia could be like, oh, one experience with this, whereas complex, it could be, like, repetitive trauma?
I mean, kind... maybe.
Is it about how easy they are to fix?
No. So, Luke is kind of spot on in regards to, you know, a simple or, you know... specific phobia being about one thing, and complex ones being more complex.
Yeah.
So you're kind of right, because a specific phobia, it's much easier to probably get a specific phobia from one instance, you know, one experience. Mm. Whereas complex phobias, because they're not as simple as specific or, you know, simple phobias, it's probably more likely that a more complex sort of series of events would lead to one.
Yeah.
That is not the dividing line between them.
Okay.
like at all. It's just you're kind of on the right track. Luke, you're spot on.
I feel like the line might be there are circumstances in which your phobia does not trigger if it's a complex phobia.
I mean, maybe. So, okay, the actual sort of dividing line between these two is that, as I said, a simple phobia or a specific phobia is around just an object or an animal or a situation or one very simple, easy to define thing, right? So, for example, dogs, bees, cars, flying, those are all like simple phobias, specific phobias, because they're very, for want of a better word, they're very specific.
So maybe like agoraphobia would be a complex one because it's not just like I'm scared of the outside, I'm scared of the things that are outside.
Yeah, like we'll get into agoraphobia in a second, actually, because it is one of the main examples of a complex phobia, and it's more complex than you would initially think. Yeah. I really think when you look into phobias, you realize that there's more than you would initially have thought.
Yeah.
Because what is kind of taught to the public is not really the full story. You know, like what is sort of disseminated through media is just, it doesn't give you a good picture of it. So I'm just going to list off some examples of simple phobias just to give you an idea of the different kinds that you can have. So there's animal ones like dogs, spiders, snakes, or rats, things like that, you know, mice as well. Environmental phobias, so that would be heights, deep water, that sort of stuff. Germs, even, and I think this is coming straight from the NHS. Bodily phobias, so blood, vomit, injections, things like that. Situational phobias, such as, like, you know, the dentist. Flying, like I mentioned.
Oh.
Driving.
Maybe I do have a phobia.
Of the dentist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't go for, like, 8 years.
That's true. You didn't go for a very, very long time. And there's also sexual phobias as well. So performance anxiety could, you know, kind of develop into some sort of phobia, or a fear of sort of STIs, things like that. You know, like all of these different things could be specific or simple phobias. And complex phobias are usually worse than simple phobias because they're not just, you can avoid one thing, right? Like you can avoid flying, you can avoid going to the dentist, you can avoid dogs generally. All of those things are very straightforward and simple.
Like germophobia would be
that's
complex
a simple one.
It could be it. What?
He said simple. He said germs earlier.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah, because...
But you have to avoid everything if you have germophobia.
Not necessarily. It depends on your understanding of germs.
Okay.
Say you can use antibacterial soap and you can get rid of a lot of germs that way, right? I mean, I guess the dividing line is kind of blurry. I mean, basically what we're doing here is trying to apply categories to things that are in the real world. And so that's really difficult. And there's going to be fuzzy lines somewhere. And that might just be one of those, you know? The complex phobia is that I've read about are agoraphobia and social phobia or social anxiety, which we actually did in an episode last week with Vigard.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So if you want to know more about social anxiety, go and watch that episode. Now, let's talk a little bit about agoraphobia. So I actually knew someone with agoraphobia. You know, they had it a few years ago and it was debilitating. Like debilitating for them. And it can be so, so, so bad. And it's more than just a fear of going outside. I feel like that's what a lot of people think it is. It's like a fear of people or going outside and you just want to stay at your home. But it's so much more than that. So you could be scared of being in situations where getting out might be difficult. So this is from the NHS. Agoraphobia is a fear of being in situations where escape might be difficult or that help wouldn't be available if things go wrong. So it's not just being outside or open spaces. It's just really complex. It could be getting on public transport or going to shopping centers or leaving your house entirely or, you know, going to a situation where, you know, like even going on a boat where you're like, oh, I might have trouble getting help or getting off of this, getting out of this place.
Is it the kind of thing where it's like a fear of putting yourself in positions where you're not going to feel safe and you stay at home because you know that that's where you feel safe?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, that is kind of a more apt description of it from what I've read than what most places are saying. Like, that's a really succinct way of putting it. Exactly. You know, and people with agoraphobia, they might, you know, do these things, but only with someone that they really trust with them, right?
Yeah.
Because they will then feel safer in that sense.
It sounds almost like applying, this may be entirely wrong, but this is just what I've got from what you're saying there. It sounds almost like applying a phobia label to that is almost a little bit misleading. It's more like a need for control. And then when there's a lack of the ability to control something, then that triggers the fear response.
I mean, not necessarily. I mean, in some cases, definitely. But I don't think it's just a lack of control. I feel like you could apply that to a lot of sort of psychiatric conditions. Though, yeah, do you know okay. what I mean? And I guess it's not just being in control of a situation. It's just being able, just being safe, right?
Or, sorry,
I mean, unless you're placing like a safety fear as control.
Well, I mean, yeah, like a fear of, like almost like a fear of being in a situation where you don't have control over the situation. No.
No,
what is actually
the
definition of agoraphobia?
Well, it literally is just what, like, there's different definitions right. from different places, from what the NHS is
but
saying.
But what's the agora mean?
Oh, I'm not sure. Let's find out.
Outside.
Well, this is, so if I thought it was outside, but then, you know, then there were examples where it's like, so you might have a fear of being on public transport because you might not be able to get out of a situation very easily, in which case it would almost, you know, you kind of want to be outside if that's your expression of agoraphobia.
Agora actually means place of assembly or marketplace. So, I mean, and bear in mind, the etymology of those words doesn't necessarily like say this is specifically what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, this is exactly it, right? Agoraphobia is complex, and so it is difficult to say this is exactly, you know, what it is. It is an irrational fear of being in open or crowded spaces, but it's more than that because a space doesn't need to be open. I mean, an open space or a crowded space, those are two completely different things.
Yeah.
Right?
Totally different.
Exactly. So you could say it's a fear of being out of your home, but that's not necessarily, I guess, the best way of describing it. That's kind of like describing ADHD as ADHD, because you're describing ADHD by the symptoms that piss off people that don't have ADHD, right?
I guess it's more of a fear of a concept of not feeling safe rather than a fear of like being outside.
Exactly. So calling agoraphobia sort of a fear of going outside isn't necessarily the best way of putting it, because yes, people that have agoraphobia will likely not go outside, but it's not necessarily because they're scared of going outside and so they're not going outside because of that. They're staying inside because that's where they feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd stay anywhere they feel safe. It just so happens that, you know, inside in your house is usually a safe place for pretty much everyone. And any other space feels unsafe. And there's that sort of fear, you know, the irrational fear associated with that there. I mean, I guess you could say that it's a sort of control thing, but I feel like that is maybe reductive of all of the different experiences of agoraphobia. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
Hark, the ad bell, he does sing.
He sings for Patreon, I think. If you head over to our Patreon at patreon.com/SciGuys, you can get a whole host of cool things. What can they get, Luke?
Oh, blooming heck. They can get so many things. There's bonus episodes. You can request topics for episodes. There's an entire other show called After Dark where we discuss sort of philosophical things and just general discussion, the kind of stuff that you imagine we talk about after we've finished recording. Well, that is when we do it, so that is what we do. And lots of other stuff. What else is there?
You get your name at the end of every single SciGuys episode. You can also vote on topics. You get to choose what we do. And at the end of the episode that's voted on by our patrons, if it's your first month being a patron, you get thanked by name. By us, the SciGuys. Isn't that fun?
That is really fun. I'll use my vocal cords to say your name with a 50% probability because Corey says half of them.
That's very true. So head to our Patreon at patreon.com/SciGuys.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
So that's agoraphobia. Let's move on more to the diagnostic criteria and diagnosis in general of phobias. So as I said earlier, phobias aren't always diagnosed because, I mean, put it this way. If you've got a fear of mayonnaise, like a phobia of mayonnaise, you're not going to necessarily going to see a doctor about it, right? No. Because it's an embarrassing thing and it feels trivial. And I don't think a lot of people know that phobias are an actual psychiatric condition that is in the DSM, like they're in the DSM-5.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're an actual thing. So, you know, I don't think people have the education to know that, hey, if this irrational fear of this thing, this object or concept is affecting my life, I can go to a doctor about it and they won't laugh me out of the place. Like, they will actually have a way to help me, you know?
Yeah. Mm.
People will usually, well, not usually, but a lot of people will just live with a phobia, just avoid the thing that is causing them, you know, that sort of distress. But it is important to know when to try and seek help for a phobia, because obviously with phobias, you can work on them yourself. You know, like, they're one of those areas where they can range so much in their severity. You know, they could be mild or they could be really, really, really bad. And if it's a mild phobia, you likely could deal with that yourself. So according to Mind, it said, it can be difficult to know when to get help for a phobia. Bear in mind that phobias are a type of anxiety disorder. It might be time to consider treatment for your phobia if avoiding the trigger object, situation, place, or activity affects your everyday life or causes you great distress. It keeps you from doing things you normally enjoy, causes intense or overwhelming fear. You've had the phobia for at least 6 months. The fear is out of proportion to the danger, or it stops you getting support for other health problems. For example, a phobia that stops you using the phone or seeing the doctor, right? Like, so, yeah, exactly, right? Go see a doctor if you can't see a doctor. But essentially what they've done here is list out the diagnostic criteria in a way, or some of the diagnostic criteria in a way that, you know, a person may be able to apply to their own life, which we should be doing more of. Like, I didn't understand phobias at all until I did this.
Mm.
I don't think any of us, I mean, you studied phobias, like, yeah, literally. Like, I don't think any of us had a great understanding of what a phobia actually is and how serious they can actually be as a sort of, you know, psychiatric condition. I mean, at least I didn't until we started doing this.
Yeah, it feels like there needs to be almost like a middle ground between going to a full-on doctor's appointment and searching your symptoms on WebMD. Like, a middle ground where it's like, these are like therapy / doctor / some medical professional approved steps for self-treatment for things, and that definitely will exist somewhere, but sort of a central service, especially like an NHS central service, that's like, okay, if you've got a mild fear, these are some tactics we find help, like exposure therapy. You might be able to do a little bit of that yourself. Like, you might be able to look at pictures of spiders, or if you see a spider, you might be able to just watch it from afar for a bit. You can put it under a glass and watch it whilst it's under the glass. Things like that. I don't know. That's not necessarily a treatment for arachnophobia. I do not. Don't listen to me. About
probably
anything.
Work, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
it's,
they do
it's...
VR. They do like VR spider, like where you got a VR headset on and there's a spider on your sort of virtual hands. And that's a form of exposure therapy. And it does help in some situations.
I mean, putting a spider under glass and just watching it is essentially unstructured exposure therapy. What you're saying about there being some sort of middle ground between a doctor's appointment and WebMD, I don't know. I feel like we should just have, I mean, I agree. I feel like we should just have a sort of service that's just a mental health service. Like, hey, I'm not feeling 100%. You know, it's like calling 111 if you don't know what's going on or whatever. 111, but for your head, your brain stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you call someone up and you're like, hey, I'm kind of feeling like this. Am I normal or am I something up?
Gory, you naive boy. I once was having a mental health crisis and I called up the equivalent of 111 mental health services and they were so beyond useless.
Really?
Like it wasn't like a local version. It wasn't like one of these like nice helplines. Like, I've done some work with Shout. Give us a shout. They're great. But it was like, I think it was just like the mental health part of my GP or something like that. And the response to, I'm having a breakdown because the medication you gave me was not prescribed on time and I had a few days off of it and then I'm back on it at a full dose and I'm going insane, was like, what do you want me to do about it?
What?
Jesus.
Yeah.
So worse
remember
than a
that
high school
day
teacher
I ended
then?
Up like... in a tree?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was after I'd called a mental health service and told them I was really not well and was having an adverse reaction to medication. And they were like, what do you want me to do about it? Not quite like that, but that was, yeah, I'm not exaggerating. That was the response, was like...
some nice calming words.
Yeah.
Some soothing advice.
And that the person didn't have the correct training.
Yeah.
And also, they maybe weren't the person, the kind of, because, you know, subsets of people. Some people are naturally very empathetic, naturally want to help. And unfortunately, these positions in might not be paid well enough to attract the right person. So they have to just pick anyone who'll take the job.
Yeah.
But... yeah, that was a real shock. I was like desperately calling down the line and I was like, oh my God. And I just hung up because I was like, what?
That's insane.
What? See, that was the response you gave me?
I had a really similar experience with 111, like the actual 111.
Oh, really?
So I was having this sort of chronic pain issue, and I'd gone to the doctors, I'd had lots of sort of tests done, and I called 111 because the pain had come back. And I was like, hey, I've been on these antibiotics for a month, the pain has come back, what is going on? You know, and these antibiotics, I wasn't allowed to go out in the sun, I couldn't properly exercise, my body was honestly dying from the inside out. And I called up and I was like, hey, what's going on? I'm in this pain again, I don't know what to do. And the woman was just like, well, have you been taking antibiotics? I'm like, yes. And she's like, well, then it's probably just a chronic thing and there's nothing we can do about it. It'll probably be happening for the next few years on and off. And I'm like, what?
Cool.
And I was shocked and upset because I was in an immense amount of pain and someone had just very callously told me that pain is not going to end for a while. And I was like, what? And she was like, don't get emotional here. Don't get hostile.
Yeah.
And
I'm
like,
what the heck?
And I'm like, what? Oh, you've just given me horrible news with a really bad tone and I'm upset. What do you expect me? How am I supposed to react to this?
Now, Corey, that would never happen under a private medical system. Yes, the call would have cost you £300, but that would never happen.
Yeah, it wouldn't have happened because I wouldn't have had the call in the first place.
Yeah.
No, I mean, look, I this is the thing. I think we need people that are trained on this. We need to have more of a focus on mental health because right now it's just a tack on thing. Like your GP can prescribe you antidepressants, but realistically, I don't think most GPs have much of an idea what they're doing when it comes to antidepressants. No offense to GPs. You got a lot going on.
Well,
you got a lot
got
to deal
such
with.
Such a broad remit.
No, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, and I'm not saying this. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying this to insult GPs. They've got a lot going on. They've got a lot to focus on. They need to deal with, you know, entire families and all of the health conditions that, you know, a kid could have, an older person could have, like, you know, a middle-aged person could have. They have to know all of that stuff and know where to direct them. And so mental health stuff is, you know, not necessarily going to be the top priority for them, or you know it's not going to be something that's, you know, first on their docket to really dive into to understand. And with mental health, I feel like you really do need to understand it, because chucking some antidepressants at someone that's depressed isn't the same as just chucking some antibiotics at someone that's got an infection, you know? Like,
yeah.
Antidepressants have a really serious effect on you, and it's not as easy as just taking some pills till you're happy, you know?
No? Crazy. Wow. Didn't know that.
So, so the diagnostic criteria for phobias, I'm just going to go through them. Or do you want to guess? What do you think? Something.
Yeah.
Think
one of the...
Have it for 6 months. It has to affect your life in negative ways. You must be avoiding. It must impact your life in some way.
It must be irrational.
Oh, wow. Have you all read the DSM-5?
I wrote the DSM-5.
Yeah. So, you know, it's the usual sort of stuff. I mean, in this case, I'll just go through it for you. So, a marked fear or anxiety about a specific object or situation, for example, flying, heights, animals, receiving an injection, seeing blood, and then the phobic object or situation almost always provokes immediate fear or anxiety. That's a really important one, obviously, you know. So if you're sometimes scared of spiders, you get a really bad response to spiders, but then the other half the time you're fine, probably not a phobia of spiders, right? The fear, anxiety, or avoidance causes clinically significant distress or impairment in social, occupational, or other important areas of functioning. It's the usual. If it's impacting your life through work, through school, through, you know, social interactions, if they're being impaired in some way, there's something wrong with you, and the DSM-5 has the answers.
I'm a spider expert, and I'm scared of spiders.
The fear or anxiety is out of proportion to the actual danger posed by the specific object or situation and to the socio-cultural context, right? And so that's another really important one, because it's kind of pointing out that, okay, look, yes, roller coasters can be dangerous and they can be kind of scary. Mm. But if you're, like, terrified, if you're wetting yourself every single time you get on a roller coaster, probably have a phobia, right? And that kind of allows for you to have phobias of scary things.
I just realized I definitely have a phobia of roller coasters.
Really?
Yeah.
What? You piss?
Why?
No, I don't piss myself.
You piss?
I just wouldn't get on one.
You could pee on a roller coaster?
I don't know. I've only ever been on like one or two in my life.
Really?
That's why I have the fear.
I used to be really scared of roller coasters because I went on one when I was like 6 at Legoland, and I had no idea what the butterfly feeling in my tummy was. I didn't know what the dropping feeling was, and like I was a bit traumatized from that. And the first time I went on one in Thorpe Park, I was like, and crying. And then as soon as it started moving, I was like, woo!
You love so roller
strange.
Coasters, right?
No, I love them. It was just like that one thing that happened when I was five that I was unsure of.
Oh, that's mad.
Yeah. I would get on like medium size. It's like a fear of spiders where you're not too scared of little spiders. Mm-hmm. I'd get on a medium roller coaster, but like any actual roller coaster. Like if I go to Thorpe Park, I'd be nah, really? I don't want to go any of those. Wow. It's just not worth it.
You seem like a non-roller coaster kind of person. But
that's the vibe I try to give off.
Yeah, but I wouldn't have thought, well, yeah, that never get invited to your one weakness, you know, meme mark. Not in the sense of you'd have a fear of roller coasters. I feel like you wouldn't see the point in them.
That's pretty much exactly it. I don't see the point. I have no interest in getting over this because I don't see the point of them. That's a very good.
Good to know.
You know me well. But why? It's because I don't get any enjoyment out of adrenaline. Mm-hmm. I have no interest in adrenaline.
Why?
Yeah.
That's insane.
So maybe I would if I got it. Maybe I'd actually get hooked. Mm-hmm. But I've never had... All my experiences of adrenaline have been negative. And so maybe I need to go on a few roller coasters, man.
Yeah, yeah. Exposure therapy. Maybe like you should do that
for Sci Guys.
Oh, yeah. Sci Guys will take a trip to Thorpe Park.
Oh, God. Do a documentary about it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we'd need to film it, wouldn't we? Gosh darn. Yeah, no, I mean, let's do that. Let's go to Thorpe Park.
Excuse me, do I get
I
to
agree.
That's 2-1.
We're not even on Sci Guys.
He's the fifth Sci Guy. He gets like, half
three-fifths of a vote. So... Some more of the diagnostic criteria: fear, anxiety, or avoidance is persistent, typically lasting for 6 months or more. Obviously, it's going to last for a long period of time. And then the usual one as well that kind of talks about other explanations. So this says the disturbance is not better explained by the symptoms of another mental disorder, including fear, anxiety, and avoidance of situations associated with panic-like symptoms or other incapacitating symptoms, as in agoraphobia. Objects or situations related to obsessions, as in obsessive-compulsive disorder, reminders of traumatic events, as in post-traumatic stress disorder, separation from home or attachment figures, as in separation anxiety disorder, or in social situations, as in social anxiety disorder. So for simple, I should have mentioned, these are for simple phobias, by the way, not for complex phobias. So for the complex phobias, I think they tend to have their own sort of diagnostic criteria. And for the simple phobias, they are, these are the diagnostic criteria for those. So what that's essentially saying is that, look, if, the behavior can be explained by separation anxiety or by social anxiety or by PTSD, then it's not a phobia. If you've got PTSD surrounding, I don't know, like roller coasters, for example,
and
like theme parks, and you avoid theme parks because your PTSD symptoms, you wouldn't really diagnose that necessarily as a phobia, mm-hmm. because it's directly because of the symptoms of PTSD, right?
Yes.
I'm just saying that makes so much sense that I have nothing to add. It's like, it's like saying, you're not depressed if something bad happened to you right at that moment and you feel sad.
It's also the typical DSM-5 clarification of like, if it can be better described by another thing, it's not this thing. So like, it's almost like phobia is then the catch-all that's not any of the other diagnoses.
Yeah, no, exactly. So if it doesn't fall under another sort of anxiety disorder... probably go under phobia, unless it's generalized anxiety disorder, and we'll get into the differences between those two in just a sec. You've also got to specify the sort of type of simple or specific phobia that it is, whether it's animal type, natural environment type, blood injection injury type, or situational type, or other type. So animal type is self-explanatory: spiders, insects, dogs. Natural environment type: heights, storms, water, all the stuff that you'd naturally find, that makes sense. Blood injection injury: that's very straightforward, needles, blood, all of that sort of stuff. And situational type: that would be airplanes, lifts, sort of elevators, enclosed spaces, things that are, for
situational.
Want of better word, situational, yeah. And then other type is basically anything that doesn't fit into those other categories. So, choking or vomiting. So if you've got like a phobia of vomiting, avoiding situations that might lead to you vomiting, or avoiding situations that might lead to you choking. Or, contracting an illness, or avoiding loud sounds, or this is a great one in children, avoidance of loud sounds or costumed characters. Because have you noticed that? Like, a lot of kids are just terrified of, those big like characters, like Mickey Mouse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like a mascot for a football team. Like, I love that. I love seeing a kid being scared.
I think it makes sense. What is so this funny. Big thing? Why is his head so big? Why are you just, why do you not blink? Like, what is, why? It makes sense.
Treatment. there's some treatment for phobias. Do you have an idea what you might do to treat a phobia?
Is exposure. One of them called? Yeah. Is one of them like called flooding or something?
Flooding.
There's like exposure therapy.
Lock someone in a room full of spiders.
Whoa, yeah. It's like obviously because you can do like gradual exposure therapy where you like introduce the concept of a spider and then you see a spider and then you touch a spider. Blah 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 blah. But I don't know what I learned was I don't remember if it was called flooding, but it was just like the most intense form of like putting yourself in the position of your fear. Like if you have a fear of spiders, they don't work you up to it. They just put you in a room with a spider.
Mm. Oh, so like I'm a celeb level, just chucking.
Yeah,
you in.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, fair.
I had something like that with skateboarding. I was never scared of skateboarding, but I was always scared of falling off the skateboard. And then I was flooded with the. With the stimulus of falling off a skateboard by falling off my skateboard. And I got a really harsh, horrible cut deep in my knee. And after that, I was not scared of skateboards because I was like, oh, that's the worst that can happen. Well, it's not the worst that can happen, but that is probably the level of fear I was fearing. I wasn't fearing like smashing my head open or something. Yeah. I was fearing falling and it being sore. And I turned out fine. Everything was okay. And then I was no longer scared of falling off a skateboard.
I don't know if it constitutes as a phobia. I guess like a lot of kids are scared of the dark or scared of like not being around their mum. But I remember distinctly when I was really scared of the dark as a kid, I was in the back of the car with my brother and there was a duvet there because we were on a long road trip. And he was like, well, let's just fix that fear of the dark. And he shoved me in the foothole, like the foot. What's it called?
The footwell.
He shoved me in the footwell and just put the blanket over my head. Until I wasn't scared of the dark anymore.
This is not the first time I've heard that story, and I still love it.
Amazing. I mean, it worked. Wow. I wasn't scared of the dark anymore. I was like, oh, it's fine.
Have you ever heard Elon Musk's thing about being scared of the dark?
No.
It's just so brilliant the way that he describes it. He just says, I used to be scared of the dark, and then I found out that darkness is just a lack of photons, and I was not scared of the dark anymore.
What a loser.
So,
well, I mean, that's great. No, that's great.
Wait, hold on.
Specifically,
what he said was
being scared of the dark. That's great.
What he said was, I used to be scared of the dark, and then I found out that the dark is just when the light is not there, and then I wasn't scared. Like, that's you can't just substitute the light for photons and make it sound.
He's just trying to sound smart.
Exactly.
But what's interesting about that is that. The dark, the fear of the dark could be, I don't study the fear of dark and why it exists, but
it's called racism, buddy.
It's called what?
It's called racism.
Anyway, it's like a lack of information, right?
Yeah.
And so like when you have a lack of information, but you don't know that that's what it is. When you're a kid, you don't know that what your actual fear is a lack of information.
The unknown, yeah.
Yeah, but you don't know it's the unknown. Mm-hmm. And so when you find out that, oh, when I have no data from this specific input that I have, it's not because something bad is going to happen. It's not the projection you make into the future, like the worst case projection you make into the future. It's just that I don't have any information. And there's no evidence to suggest that the state of the world has changed from the state it was in when there was information. So I can extrapolate out roughly what the state of the world was when the light went off. And then pay more attention to my other senses and it will probably be fine. To me, it makes perfect sense because you don't know that dark is a lack of light. You have to learn that.
True, yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, it makes sense. It's just like a very wanky thing to say.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
I used to be scared of the dark, but then I realized it was just the photons.
Yes,
I get it.
It's a wanky thing to say because it suggests that anybody else who has a fear of the dark and is told that and doesn't get better is like an idiot or a loser.
Yeah.
It's a Neil deGrasse Tyson level sort of way of describing something, right? Where you're like, oh, yes, this is just a lack of... Just speak like a normal person.
So anybody... The implication is that anybody that doesn't work on is...
stupid.
Illogical and stupid, yeah. Well,
I disagree that a fear of the dark is illogical.
No, it's perfectly logical.
Yeah.
It's a lack of information. What's your brain meant to process?
You should be scared of the dark. Like, you should be scared of the dark. Oh, you're walking out into the park in the middle of the night and you can't see anything and you feel scared? Yes, good. You should be feeling scared. Because you don't know what is... Like, that is a good thing that your body is doing because then you're going to be alert. You're going to be ready for things as opposed to, like, just strolling through a park and, I don't know, getting mugged.
Yeah, because being scared is just, like, it's a heightened alertness, isn't it?
Yeah.
And a heightened sort of... Your brain is sort of making a larger... Like, you're assuming... Your anxiety level is literally high. You're assuming the worst thing is more close than it actually is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good because you're also going to find that out, like less time.
Yeah.
Like if something comes at you, you're going to find that out a lot later than if there was light.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, I mean, look, I mean, being scared of the dark in terms of being in your house and not being able to have the lights turned off, okay, that's getting to the point of being irrational, right? But just a general scared of the dark sort of thing, yes, you should be. In the same sense of, like, you know, being scared of heights, you probably should be kind of scared of heights because they can damage you. More the falling, you know. But yeah.
But the chances of falling to your death are much higher when you're high up.
That's so true.
I'm not going to fall to my death off of this chair.
So maybe it's high chances that we should be scared of.
Yes.
Yes, that's the truth.
Well, higher chances. It's still not high chances. Yeah. But higher chances.
Higher chances, yeah, exactly. No, but I mean, there are some fears that are, and I think this is tying back into phobias pretty nicely, in that there are plenty of rational things to be scared of. It's just the level of sort of response to those is what dictates whether we think that it's irrational or whatnot. Because, you know, you should be scared of the dark, but some people are really, really scared of the dark, and that you probably shouldn't be that scared of the dark, you know?
One thing that really helped me with being a generally happier person, maybe you're going to sound, let's say this sounds like really stupid and wanky, like the Elon Musk thing. One thing that generally helped me being a happier person is to...
This sounds really stupid, like the, and wanky, like the Elon Musk thing.
Okay. is learning how neural networks work. So if you, I learn about neural networks and how neural networks are processing and how, like one of the theory, you can extrapolate out theories about neural networks into a way of understanding us and how we create our world that we experience, and learning how that stuff works, because neural networks are us trying to build ourselves, right? We're trying to understand intelligence and we're trying to build it artificially. And so once you understand the things that artificial intelligence experts had to figure out how we're doing it or how we could do it feasibly if we don't know how we do it, and build that thing, then you understand, or at least possibly understand, yourself better. Mm-hmm. So the one that I love is the idea that, like, you as the self, like the thing that you are, that you, the I that you think you are, can be seen as like a, your brain's model of the entire system. So, like, what you're experiencing is not the light from your eyes. It is your brain's best guess of what caused the light from your eyes based on a bunch of models that you've learned. Mm. And by extension, if you have a model of a cup, a model of an orange, you also have a model of yourself inside your head. Because, and there are things that you do subconsciously that you don't know about because you don't have a model for them. And so that really helped me. Whether that way of looking at things and that way of looking at ourselves will turn out to be the theory of everything, mm-hmm. when it comes to experiencing the world, who knows? But it was a really good model for me to sort of then tack other things on about myself that I didn't understand. So, like, for example, when somebody is scared of the dark, you're scared of a lack of information, and because you're scared of a lack of information, you can't apply any model to that information because there's no information. So you're just then sort of multiplying all of the worst possible things by almost an infinite number, depending on your level of anxiety, because you have to assume those things. Otherwise, the self will be destroyed, and the purpose of the self is to sort of simulate the body and simulate the goals of the self in order to feed back to the system what it should do. Does that make any sense?
It does.
Yes.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of what happened with me in sleep paralysis, and that sort of hypervigilant state that you can be in, you know, when you wake up, or, you know, sort of randomly late at night. Because I used to get really bad sleep paralysis, and it comes and goes now, but whenever it would happen, it would always be the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
Because I'm fully in that experience, and I'm thinking that I'm dying. I've got something on my chest, and I would always think, oh no, I'm waking up and I can't breathe. I'm dying. Every single time. And then I found out what sleep paralysis was, and I was like, oh, this again. Here we go. Yeah. And now sleep paralysis is just a tedious thing that I have to sit through for 5-10 minutes until my body decides to wake up.
Yeah, and that's exactly it, is that you've now got a model that explains the thing you're experiencing. So that's kind of what I mean as well, is that you've now got an internal model that describes the input that your brain is receiving, And that model takes into account a sort of model of itself. So your brain now understands the limitations of its own of the system that it is a part of. And the idea, I'm experiencing a sort of scary demon running across the room, not because there actually is a scary demon running across the room, but because the area of my brain that deals with the hallucinations that create dreams is still awake.
Yeah.
For example.
It's like understanding things makes it way less scary.
Exactly.
And like having things that aren't unpredictable happening is less scary. If you can predict things and understand things, it's like way less scary.
No, absolutely. And I just think that you've kind of put into words exactly this experience that's kind of been running in the back of my head for a bit, where, you know, I really enjoy sort of studying science and looking into all of this stuff, particularly psychology stuff, because I feel like once you understand that better, everything just becomes so much easier. Because there are lots of things that you can kind of learn about yourself by yourself. But for example, this sort of like hypervigilance thing that sometimes happens, I don't think it's called hypervigilance, but you know, this sort of heightened state of sort of fear, you know, or that sort of feeling that you get really late at night or when you wake up.
Hypervigilance is an ADHD thing as well, isn't it?
Is it? I thought hypervigilance was specifically a PTSD thing.
Probably in a bit of everything.
Let's just call it hypervigilance. So you can be in sort of hypervigilant state late at night or when you wake up. And, you know, you can't really understand that yourself unless you understand how people work. You won't necessarily know, oh, that's not a normal thing. So, I mean, it's kind of the same as sleep paralysis thing. Whenever I get that feeling now, I'm just like, oh, dumb brain, you're scared. Haha, I'm smarter than you. I'm not scared anymore. Like, you can separate yourself. It's not quite like dissociation, but you can intellectually separate yourself from the experiences of your body.
Yeah.
And kind of feedback into not feeling that way, because you're just telling your brain, hey, brain, hey, dumbass. No, we're good. We're good. And here's why, you know?
Yeah.
And knowledge, like, that kind of knowledge just makes your life so much better.
Yeah.
Learning is good.
Wow, that's a real hot take, man. That's going to be controversial.
Maybe we should get back to the treatment. So, yeah, Noah, you touched on exposure therapy, and there's CBT, psychotherapy, lots of different kinds of therapies. Medicines you can have, antidepressants, tranquilizers, beta blockers. So basically antidepressants, anti-anxiety stuff, you know, that sort of thing. Generally, you know, you get why they're using all of that. CBT is apparently the most sort of effective treatment for phobia. And you could also kind of treat phobias yourself, not properly treat, but if it's a mild phobia, you can just desensitize yourself or expose yourself to it. I've kind of done it to myself with moths a little bit. I'm better with moths than I used to be. They disgust me. And same with needles. So I actually had a real big like issue with needles for a long time. I'd break dentist chairs if they tried to stick a needle in my mouth, and they stopped sticking needles in my mouth. I'd grip them until the plastic
was
getting cracked.
It's like a superhero origin story.
Just crack it. Beat the dentist. But like, I used to really not like needles. I've had a couple blood tests recently, and I look away, but I've looked at the needle in my arm. I hate it, but I can still look at it. You know? Like, you can just expose yourself to these things that that kind of give you that fear response. So before we finish, let's just quickly talk about what causes phobias. Who can tell me what the cause of phobias are?
Well, it's not just one cause, is there?
You're right.
Well, it could be trauma. Well, like, you can condition someone to have a phobia.
Yes.
Like, the literal, is it little Albert was conditioned to have a phobia of, like, little mice, and then that transferred into white fluffy things?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right there. So I think one of the most irritating causes of phobias for me is that sort of association, the sort of learned phobias. So there's obviously genetic component as well. Some people are more predisposed genetically to, you know, like forming a phobia. There could also be a trauma thing.
How do we know that it's genetic and not just learned from your parents?
They'll have done studies that they'll have done studies on that. But obviously those
you
both
get two
are
twins
factors.
And you separate them at birth and you expose them both to big spiders and see if they both get scared of spiders. But also one parent has to be scared of spiders too.
I was going to ask if it skips a generation.
No. As far as I'm aware, no. We don't know a
Is
ton.
It a recessive gene?
We don't know a ton. What we do know is that
predisposition
to phobias.
He's lost control of the class. predisposition to phobia. So it's not a specific phobia.
Yeah.
It's the whatever is going on in the brain to form a phobia. For some people that happens, like the threshold for developing a phobia is lower.
Yeah. In the same sense that the threshold for developing, you know, PTSD from trauma is, you know, it can be variable in different people. And that is sort of not controlled genetically, but influenced by genetics.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's that aspect, but the one that irritates me the most is those, is that sort of learned phobia. So, for example, let's say you're a parent and you have a young child, let's say a child of about 3 years old. And
my child.
No.
Thank you, daddy.
And you see a spider and you freak out.
Yeah.
That kid is going to learn, yes, spider means freak out.
They also do that with, when you're raising a child, anyone here raising a child right now, if your kid falls over and they don't look like they're about to burst in tears, don't fuss over them. Because a lot of kids will learn that if they fall over and they look to their parents to see what their reaction should be and their parents look scared, and the kid will be more likely to cry and to be scared and to feel more pain.
That's why you see so many videos of parents will film their kids and they'll fall over, right? And you see so many videos of this online, where a kid falls over and they look up at their parents and they're totally fine.
Yeah.
Until the parents are like, oh, are you okay? Oh, my little darling, are you all right? And then the kid is like,
yeah.
It's like, if your kid falls over, it'd be like, you're right, lads.
You good?
They'll just get up and they'll be fine. If your kid does not get up, that's when you go over. Otherwise, they're probably all right.
I do this with you sometimes.
What?
Like, you'll whack your head in the ceiling or something and you'll be like, ah, fuck.
True. I did do that. Yeah. I am very vocal when it comes to responding to injuries. I don't know why. Even if it doesn't hurt that much, I'll just like, ah.
Yeah. It's very stressful if I'm like downstairs in the living room and I hear like, ah.
Well, it's more of the shock. I get shocked. I'm surprised.
Ooh.
I actually, to be honest, if I do really hurt myself, I probably make less of a noise. The noise is like the noise of me stubbing my toe is usually pretty particular because I will swear in ways that I don't swear otherwise.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. It's just a string of expletives. But yeah, no, like that's the one that really bothers me, because parents will teach their kids to be scared of things like spiders for absolutely no reason. And the way to solve this is very simple. Just chill the F out when it comes to, you know, showing your kids those sort of new experiences. If you're scared of something, you really got to try and keep a lid on it, because otherwise your kid is probably going to be scared of it too.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, I mean, other than that, there aren't that many more causes that we know, other than sort of, you know, particular incidents or like trauma. So if you were bitten by a dog as a kid, you could have a fear of dogs, which obviously makes sense. Learning it from, you know, in early life from a parent or sibling or other sort of close family member. And then also, you could just have like strong reactions to fear or, you know, panic. And obviously, phobias can cause panic attacks and things like that. They're anxiety disorders, so that makes a lot of sense. And then another one is long-term stress. So phobias, I think, are kind of interestingly similar to PTSD.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what's the line between PTSD and a phobia? Because you said, like, you can have a traumatic experience like being bitten by a dog, and then you're scared of dogs. So what do you know what the line between PTSD and a phobia is?
With a phobia, you're absolutely fine most of the time, unless you experience the trigger.
Ah.
And so it's just that one specific trigger that causes you the distress, and otherwise you're good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're not spending your whole life like, I mean, okay, so you could have a situation where, so it would be a more complex one. So, you know, like a complex phobia. With agoraphobia, where you're like, I can't go outside, this affected my whole life in that way. But with, you know, a simple one like a fear of dogs from being bitten by a dog when you were a kid, you can just avoid dogs. And if you are never that close to a dog, you'll probably be fine. Whereas with PTSD, that's more, that kind of more affects you, I guess, holistically, regardless of a trigger, you know. Mm. Obviously, you can be, it can be exacerbated by the triggers. But I think with PTSD, you are affected more generally. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of an overview of phobias. I hope we all know a little bit more about them. Do we?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Are we ready to test that knowledge in a quickfire quiz?
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
Phobia edition.
So, the rules of the quickfire quiz will be the same as always. I'll ask one question. That's one question between the two of you. The first person to buzz into the correct answer wins. What do they win, Luke?
Nothing.
You're gosh darn right. So, Noah, what is your buzzer?
Ah!
Luke, what is your buzzer?
Stole my buzzer.
My question for you is, what are the two main types of phobia? Luke, you got that first.
complex and simple phobias.
Ding, ding, ding. You are correct. And that is it from us. But before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with a very special thank you to executive producers Danito and Glitch Rabbit. And thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday. And why not leave us a nice wee review? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find a contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCorey everywhere.
You can follow me at LukeCutforth everywhere.
You can follow me at NoOffence everywhere, apart from Twitter, where it's NoOffence Adams, and TikTok, where it's the NoOffence.
Goodbye.
For God's sake, just buy it off them already.
You've got the money. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar. With a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry, IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ Mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to iqbar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's iqbar.com, promo code KELLER20.